gehosted bij Maurice Oostendorp, CEO, en Annemiek van Meling, CFO of de Volksbank. At this moment, all participants are in listen only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would like to hand over the conference to Mr. Maurice Oostendorp. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and also welcome on my and Annemiek's behalf in this conference call, in which we will present our 2018 results. Before I start with the key points of the last year, I actually would like to start with a highlight of this year, which is the fact that we've reached the milestone of 1.5 million customers with current accounts. This target was set by the bank to be reached by the end of 2020, but we've been able to reach that target already now. And it's in line with the growth of our client base as we've seen that in last year. So we expect also that this growth will continue during the course of 2019. 1.5 million current account customers against the background of, by the way, over 3.2 million clients in total. We've seen a further growth in the retail mortgage portfolio, increasing our market share in new production to 7%. And in net profit terms, we've realized a net profit of 268 million. Which is a 19% decrease compared to 2017. This decrease was expected and is also in line with our earlier guidance. And we can also, of course, explain what is behind this decrease. Annemiek will go into that much further in detail. This profit translates itself into an ROE of 7.6%, although we like to add to that that that's based on a very solid capital position. Core Tier 1 ratio increased to 35.5% and the leverage ratio stayed stable at 5.5%. We've taken more initiatives with respect to banking with the human touch. We approached approximately 150,000 interest-only mortgage customers to talk about what is the best way to be able to continue living in your house in a pleasant way. We actively brought back around 6,000 customer files from debt collection agencies, and we've introduced an ASN mortgage with features to promote sustainable living. On page 3, you find an overview of our long-term objectives. Customer satisfaction levels have further improved. Current account customer numbers have increased. First time, we show the financial confidence barometer, which shows a 9% point increase over the baseline measurement. The climate neutral balance sheet, we've been able to improved that by 10% point in 2018. Unfortunately, we've seen a reduction of the employee NPS, and the return on equity, as I mentioned, reduced to 7.6, albeit at that high capital base. We intend to provide an update of our long-term targets in the second half of 2019, and we will say more about that later. Few words about banking with the human touch. We think that recognition for what is our mission is important. And we've received high marks for our sustainability policy. On page 5, you can see the different rankings that we've reached. And we've also concluded that the reward we got from Management Scope, the Corporate Impact Award, as the company with the most positive social impact in the Netherlands, feels as a support for what we have started to execute, banking with a human touch. In December 2018, the Fair Bank Guide proclaimed us the most sustainable bank in the Netherlands, and our brands also won several awards, both for their mortgage services and several websites. We want to contribute to the financial resilience of our customers. For that reason, we introduced the financial confidence barometer, where we ask the client, if and when you get into financial problems, do you believe that the bank, your bank, will support you in coping with those problems? That percentage increased from the initial baseline measurement 40% to 49%, almost at the level of our 2020 target. Idealistically, of course, a bank would like to see this percentage to be at 100. That's what we strive for. So once we will get to the 50, we will set a higher number in order to continue the contribution to the financial resilience of our customers. We set up preventive management under the BLG Wonen brand, Regiobank and SNS brands, and customers can contact us about expected payment problems, and we've also contacted vulnerable customers ourselves. We think it's extremely important to discuss potential problems or actual problems with clients as soon as possible in order to solve them straight away, because long periods of payment problems are not perceived as in line with banking with the human touch. For that reason, we also proactively contacted customers with an interest-only mortgage to encourage them to repay or build up capital. And we've approached approximately 150,000 customers, and we've gained insights in the complexity, but also in the way clients deal with this and how we can further improve our advice to, like I said, repay or build up capital. We retrieved approximately 6,000 customer files from debt collection agencies, receiving positive feedback from clients, and also staff appreciates this approach, because it's much more pleasant to help clients with their financial problems than to hand over a legal file to a debt collection agency. And we introduced, as I said, early 2018, the objective for financial resilience, and we've made good progress there. Another key performance indicator is the climate neutrality of our balance sheet. We strive for 100% climate neutrality by 2030, and that translates into a 45% climate neutral balance sheet by 2020. For that, we need to for that target to reach, we need to improve year on, and we've improved by 10 percentage points to 37%. This is a net of two movements. We've increased the investments in renewable energy financing and in green bonds. At the same time, we launched new initiatives to help customers make their homes more sustainable. A good example is the newly introduced ASN mortgage, enabling customers to finance, additional to the mortgage, energy saving measures. But our growth of the mortgage portfolio translated itself into a small CO2 loss, because it happens to be in the day-to-day practice not easy to agree with clients on decisions to improve the energy level of their homes. So we need to continue the discussions, we need to continue the product development, we need to continue our advice in order to improve that percentage of A, B energy labels in our portfolio. We also further simplified our business operations. We simplified the mortgage quotation and application processes, which enabled us to cope with larger production volumes without increasing staff. And we expect, in line with earlier remarks, that we will be able to decrease the number of staff by 800 to 900 towards the end of 2020. The number of permanent employees has now dropped by 361 compared to the end of 2016. The number of external staff rose to fill temporary shortages, mainly for regulatory and compliance related projects. We want to be a smart adapter of innovation. We continued work on the pilot 1-2 app, which enables clients to select their own contact person within the bank and in theory ask them 24/7 the questions they might have. Of course, staff doesn't reply 24/7, but it's a very direct linkage between the client and the bank in order to work on the way we want to relate to clients. We developed a My Budget functionality in the payment app of our brands, and in preparation of the introduction of the Payment Services Directive 2, which we expect to become live end of next week, we introduced a master switch for customers to switch the transfer of payment data to third parties on or off at any time. Data are a crucial element. The way we deal with data form a crucial element in our privacy policy. Data belong to clients. We don't develop business models to earn money together with third parties. And we take our duty of care extremely serious when it boils down to handing over information from our clients to third parties. So in case a client approves that, he needs to turn the switch from off to on, and that creates for us a moment to signal the consequences of what they have agreed to. So again, a very concrete way of taking duty of care. Options for the future. In the fall of 2018, NLFI issued a second progress report on the privatization of the Volksbank. One of the conclusions was that the Volksbank would at least need the full 3-year period starting mid-2016 before a decision on the privatization can be taken. Based on the latest NLFI report, the Minister of Finance has drawn the conclusion that the Volksbank will at least need this period to elaborate the shared valued ambition and further strengthen its social identity. And we agree with that. As soon as the Volksbank is ready for privatization, NLFI will advise the Minister of Finance accordingly. If that advice is not feasible by mid-2019, which is not to be excluded, NLFI will again issue another progress report and give an indication of the timeline expected at that point in time. A few remarks more in detail on the commercial developments. We've seen a further improvement of our customer-weighted Net Promoter Score. For the fifth year in a row, the weighted average of our NPS has improved, and we've almost reached the number 0. And as you can see on the right-hand side of the page, you can only reach a positive score by having predominantly promoters scoring you a 9 or 10 for your service. We hope to continue the trend in this year in order to get on a weighted average number which is positive, but so far we've been able for 5 years in a row to improve client satisfactions. As I said before, we've increased the current account customers, which is a driving force behind our customer growth. The net growth was 74,000, which was sharply higher than in 2017. And it's mainly due to a higher inflow of customers, reaching, as I said, the 1.5 million in total this year, almost 2 years earlier than was in our long-term plan. What is also important is that this growth was across the board. All our brands, ASN Bank, Regiobank and SNS, have shown healthy growth percentages here. Our market share in new retail mortgage production was higher than our market share on a total portfolio basis. We've reached that point already a year earlier, but we continued that development in 2018. Our market share in new retail mortgage production increased to 7.3%, and on a total portfolio basis, our market share rose slightly to 6.7%. end-of-year figures are not yet available, not because we don't have them, but the market numbers are not available yet. On the retail side, we've seen an increase on the retail savings balances from almost 37 to 37.5 billion. The Dutch retail savings market grew despite the low saving rates and because of market adjustments in the way the Dutch Central Bank produces those numbers, we've seen a technical decrease of 0.1% of the market share, but basically the volume is stable. As I said, a steady and controlled increase of the retail mortgage portfolio, and since 2016 our production is higher than the redemption, with the logical consequence of an increase of the portfolio. And all in all, if we look at 2018, we're very pleased with the year because of the growth of the client base, the growth of the client satisfaction, the increase in our portfolios, and a result which is roughly in line, if you take the very strong capital position into consideration, with our 2080 target of 8%. And Annemiek will give more insights on that financial performance now.
Thanks, Maurice. Well, as Maurice already explained, our net profit came out at 268 million for the year, which is 19% lower than last year. The decline is mainly related to lower income, specifically on the investment income and on the financial instruments income, and a lower release of provisioning, whilst cost remained relatively flat. That 268 million represents a return on equity of 7.2%, which is based on the capital position that belongs to a 35.5% quarter one and 5.5% leverage ratio. We do see a slight decline in net profit in the second half of the year versus the first half, largely driven by a swing in impairment charges, driven by additional dotation for longer defaults, and a slightly higher operating expense level. If we look at the income side on the next slide, as I said, we saw an income drop of 7%, which was mainly related to lower gains on bonds and incidental items, the DBV mortgage book, whilst the net interest income held up relatively well. It showed a decrease of 2%. And the NIM margin decreased from 150 basis points to 147 basis points. The decrease of NIM was predominantly related to the fact that lower interest expenses on savings could almost compensate for lower income on mortgages, but not also compensate for increased hedging costs related to the increased interest rate typical duration of mortgages within our book. And the latter is partly driven by a change in demand of clients for longer duration mortgages, which we to some extent facilitate, but obviously not as much as the insurance companies do. But even more so, it's related to changes in our underlying behavioral models, which, based on the current low interest rate environment, the fact that most of the people have by now renewed their interest rate to low rates, and the expectations that the number of transactions and mortgages will come down, which all boils to lower movers and to a longer interest rate duration of the mortgage book. And that impact leads to higher duration, higher risk position, which we obviously manage with derivatives, with payer swaps, and the cost related to that increased compared to last year. Other than the NIM, as I said, we saw a decline in investment income, which was largely due to the fact that last year, from a risk perspective, we sold a proportion of our French bonds prior to the French elections last year. We did make a profit on that. It wasn't intended to make a profit because it was done from a risk management perspective, but we did make a profit on it. We did not make such a profit this year. Whilst we did also sell some bonds from a risk perspective, predominantly our Italian bonds this year. The results on financial instruments, the drop there is largely explained by the positive fair value movements from the DBV portfolio, which was in 2017 still accounted for at fair value, but which with the introduction of IFRS 9, we took the opportunity to change that to the amortized cost base as well, leading to a relatively clean net income and clean net profit figure, no longer having the DBV adjustments there. If we go to the expense side, we see relatively flat operating expenses with 562 million compared to 560 last year. So virtually flat, despite the 9% reduction in internal FTE, which was largely driven by the efficiency measures that we've executed. And despite the release of non-credit provisioning of 9 million, we did end up flat on the cost side, and that was mostly driven by additional costs from a regulatory and supervisory project related angle, some wage inflation, and to a lesser extent temporary projects that we executed ourselves from a business perspective. Quite some pressure from the regulatory side on cost last year, as well as I guess we've seen with some other banks as well. Our cost income ratio increased from 55.4 on an adjusted level, i.e. excluding DBV last year, to 58.7% this year, and that decrease is entirely driven by a lower income, given the flat nature of the operating cost level that's included in there. The loan book continued to improve in quality, largely driven obviously by macroeconomic circumstances. If we look at the number of loans that are in arrears, i.e. one day past due, that's 1.1%, decreased to 500 million. And at the same time, we've seen, due to the price increases in the Dutch housing market and due to the fact that increasingly a larger proportion of our book is actually redeeming rather than interest only, we've seen loan to value decrease to 70%. The positive macro environment also led to a continuation of a release in provisioning, albeit less than we've seen last year, and we do expect that the end is coming for the releases of provisioning. But this year we still released 12 million, contrary to the 24 million last year. In the second half of this year, we took a one-off dotation to provision for defaults that are longer than 5 years. In total, that was 10 million, which is incorporated in the 4 million that you see in the second half of 2018. Coverage ratio of stage 3 amounted to roughly 8.5%, and stage 3 loans represent 1.2% of the total loan book. On the capitalization side, we did see our quarter one rise to 35.5%, despite the negative impact of the introduction of IFRS 9 at the beginning of the year. This was primarily driven by the reduction in risk-weighted assets. The leverage ratio remained relatively flat at 5.5%, and obviously with these capital ratios, we don't see any reason why not to pay at the top of the payout ratio of 60%. And hence, we've proposed a dividend of 161 million to our shareholder. We do have the intention to merge the Volksbank NV with the Volksholding BV. The holding is currently a holding with no other goal than holding 100% of the shares in the bank. It serves no other purpose, and from a capital perspective, that is no longer efficient. As the tier 2 notes that we currently have outstanding do get a haircut upon introduction, and if we are to issue more tier 2 notes, or if we were to issue tier 1 notes in the future, they will get a similar haircut. Hence, we have proposed to merge that. We filed the DNO at the supervisor, and subject to approval of shareholder and supervisor, we will hopefully be able to merge that within the first half of this year. A full inclusion of the outstanding Tier 2 notes would then imply a total capital ratio of 40.8%. If we look at our capital ratios, we obviously do, and the capital position, we obviously recognize that it's a relatively large capital position that we have. We're currently in a dialogue with our shareholder to update the capital targets as well as the other long-term targets that we have defined in 2016. And we hope to provide more information on the capital targets and the other targets, and hence also the potential to distribute excess capital at the second half of this year. From an MREL perspective, we're well positioned. We've received final confirmation from the SRB that the MREL applicable to us is 8%. If we migrate towards a situation where that would be fully consisting of Tier 1, Tier 2, and senior non-preferred, we would expect to, in the next couple of years, issue some senior non-preferred notes around 1 to 1.5 billion, and that should be sufficient to reach the MREL requirements that we have. In terms of outlook, given the geopolitical tensions, the trade war, the Brexit, but also the slightly deteriorated macroeconomic circumstances and expectations as we've seen in the Eurozone coming through for the last couple of weeks, we don't expect any near-term interest rate rise, and we therefore expect that there will continue to be pressure on our net interest income, combined with the fact that we no longer expect the release of provisions. We do expect a reduction in absolute level of cost, but we don't expect that reduction to be able to fully compensate pressure on net interest income and no longer having a release of provisioning levels. Therefore, we do expect a slightly lower net profit for 2019 compared to 2018. With that, I would like to hand the floor over for questions and end our presentation here.
Questions will be answered in the order that they are received. So if you have a question, please press star one. First question is from Mr. Cor Kluis, ABN AMRO. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, Cor Kluis, ABN AMRO. I've got a couple of questions. First of all, about the FTEs. I see that currently around 21% of the staff is external. And we understand, of course, that it's somewhat higher due to regulatory and compliance FTEs that you need. Can you give an idea about going forward what percentage of your staff should be external FTEs? And also related to that, how much more expensive is externals versus internals? Because some of those people you might also need more on a structural basis in the future. So that's my first question. Second question is on cost. The cost in the second half was a little bit higher than the first half, but indeed we've seen it in some other banks as well. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the cost in 2019? You hinted on that cost will come down. Why will that come down, and in which fields, and yeah, how much should it approximately come down in this in 2019? And my third question is about exit IPO. You basically say it's not yet ready for IPO. You talked about improved social identity. Could you, in somewhat more concrete terms, describe what still has to be done? Because I think quite a few banks would be proud to have a balance sheet like that, for example. And that's on the IPO item. And the last item, just as a check, you mentioned that new targets to be determined by the end of 2019. I thought that you also said we might distribute excess capital also by the end of this year. Could you indicate if I heard it correctly, or what you exactly meant with that? Those were my questions.
Okay, Cor, I will start briefly with three, and then Annemiek takes over one, two, and the remaining part of three. Today is about the 2018 numbers. What we've said about the advice from LFI is in the presentation. We do expect to need the full 3-year period, but it's also possible that by mid-2019 LFI will again issue another progress report indicating new timelines of further details on that. As Annemiek said, we will come with actualized longer term financial targets at our half year numbers this year. And that will answer then also the question you've asked about capital targets. Annemiek.
Okay, the first question you had was on the percentage of external FTE. The 21% is indeed higher than we would really like to see. It's partly driven by people that we retain to facilitate regulatory or other project driven by the supervisor, or the collection of retaining clients from debt collectors. So we do consider that on the high end, and we would like to migrate to something that would be kind of around half of that figure. We don't have a very specific target on number of external people, but we do want to bring that down. In terms of expenses, to a large extent, they are roughly the same, or to some extent is even cheaper than our own internal FTEs. And that's really for the bulk of the people that we've hired externally. It's only for a very small part where you would hire specific quants or risk management related external people to facilitate on risk management projects. Like TRIM or what we've seen on the introduction of IFRS 9, there you would typically have some external people that would be more expensive than the average internal staff. But by and large, the external population is as expensive or cheaper than the internal staff. And we always want to have some sort of a flexible surrounding, especially in the call centers, etc., to deal with peak level in terms of operating environment. If you look at the cost for 2019, I'm not going to disclose the specific forecast there. We do expect an absolute decrease in cost level, and one of the key items there will indeed be the reduction of external people. If you look at the composition of the cost base now, it was relatively flat, even though we did show the reduction of internal FTE, and even though we had a release of non-credit provisioning in there. But we've also made quite some expenses related to regulatory projects, be it customer due diligence, anti-money laundering, risk management projects related to, for instance, the TRIM, data management, on-site inspections. We've made quite some costs for that, and that would roughly equate to around 10 million last year. Now, we don't think we will not have any of those costs next year, but we do think that they will be less next year. And the increases in terms of amount of people and money that we spend on CDD and AML, we've seen the largest increases there end of 2016, beginning of 2017. And we've seen a minor increase still in 2018, but we're now there at the run level where we want to be. So from a CDD anti-money laundering perspective, we do not for 2018 expect a further increase, or we're not hiring there more FTE, as we've already done so in 2016-17. In terms of targets, Marie's already alluded to, and in terms of excess capital, I'm happy to hear that you're proud of our balance sheet as well. And I have to say, as a CFO, it obviously feels very comfortable to run such a well-positioned balance sheet and not have to worry about the impact of Basel IV. And still being able to grow the business rather and spend some capital on it. Having said that, we do realize that we have a very robust capital base, and that from our perspective, there would be some room to distribute excess capital. But it all starts with the setting of capital targets. And on specifically that item, we're currently having a dialogue with our shareholder as to where those capital targets should be for a monoline Dutch retail bank. We realize that those targets will always be higher than the more diversified banks. We will need a larger buffer to compensate for a low for long interest rate scenario, to compensate for stress. There's still some uncertainties on Basel IV and new NPE regulation, so we do need some buffers there. And then from a leverage ratio perspective, we also want to look at a kind of peer set there, and also look at it with a bit of a European angle, realizing that some of the Dutch banks typically rank pretty low in terms of leverage ratio if you would compare it to the to a European context. We're currently having that dialogue. We would expect that to finalize in the second half of this year, and based upon that dialogue we will also form our thoughts on excess capital distribution. We'll still need to take some hurdles with shareholder but also with the supervisor there. So the actual timing of that excess capital distribution, I can't comment on yet.
Okay, very, very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Albert Ploeg, ING. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning all. Also thank you for taking my questions. The first one is maybe to come back, unfortunately, a bit on course question on the capital side as well. Maybe first on TRIM and NPE guidance. I saw that was also, of course, mentioned in your update this morning. Can you give maybe somewhat color around how big of an impact you think it may be? Because it seems that TRIM for other Dutch banks on mortgages have not been a very big issue, and potentially more on SMB and corporates, which clearly is not your biggest exposure. So some color there would be helpful. Also, it's clearly helpful that you provide all the Basel IV disclosures as well. But in terms of potential mitigation actions, should we pencil in any, or do you think it will be very difficult, given you're basically a monoline mortgage bank, how to do that? The third point on the capital and also the update on targets. I know we will not get an answer today where the targets will be, but should we think more along the lines that you will probably come with some kind of Basel IV kind of target setting, given also the rather big potential impact from Basel IV? And if I can squeeze in one more question, is on the net interest income outlook. You guide for basically some pressure going into 2019, which is understandable. Is it maybe possible to give some quantification there? Should we think of NII to be down 2-3%, given you probably have a good handle on the renewal impact, and I guess I also believe that the renewals probably will fade out as most people have refinanced by now, so some color there would be helpful as well. Thank you.
To get back to your first question on TRIM, unfortunately we are not one of the banks who was first in line to actually receive the formal communication on the TRIM, so we're actually still awaiting that. And we should get that by the end of Q1, hopefully. So we'll be able to guide a bit more on the impact there. Well, based on the 35.5% quarter one that we have, we're certainly not worried about TRIM, and the impact of Basel IV will in any case be far larger than any impact of the TRIM could be. So we're not that worried there, but we just don't have the final outcome yet. In terms of new NPE regulation, there's quite a bit on the longer defaults, on the linear provisioning for it, and we're currently trying to work out what the impact there would be. It's hard to estimate. There has been no impact on the 2018 figures, and for the, I think, next 1 to 2 years, I don't expect that new regulation to lead to provisioning or capital impact that goes over the IFRS provisioning level plus the shortfall. So for the next 2 years, I don't expect large impact from that, but we still have to see what, on a longer term perspective, that new NPE regulation, be it the regulation impacting the stock as of 1 April 2018, or the SREP guidance that has been given on the stock prior to 1 April 2018, what that will do long term. The second question on Basel IV and mitigating impact, I couldn't really understand what you meant there. I mean, given that on a Basel IV perspective, even if it would be phased in fully now, we would still have close to 25% quarter one. So in terms of mitigating
action. It is more, let's say, that's probably on the static balance sheet as it is today. Some banks were guiding maybe for 25 to 30 potential mitigation, let's say, before the introduction of the actual Basel regulation. But I think that probably they can do more optimization on the corporate side in your, basically mortgage bank. So I doubt whether you can do much about the composition of your balance sheet in relation to that 11% inflation that you guide for today, basically.
Yeah, that's right. That would really mean a shift in our business model, and we don't have any strategic ambitions to start wholesale banking or to make some changes there or do something on the corporate side. In terms of capital targets, you're right in thinking that it will be a fully phased Basel IV capital target that we hopefully will disclose in the second half of this year. Combination of fully phased Basel IV plus a leverage ratio target, which should then be applicable to a monoline Dutch retail bank. In terms of the NII outlook, we don't give the exact guidance for next year, but I would at least account for a decrease at least similar to what we've seen this year, and that would also entail some lower prepayment penalties than we have incurred this year. So both the fact that I don't think any of, or at least speaking for our bank, we don't have the intention to migrate sight deposit rates below 0%. We do see continued pressure on mortgages. We still have some leeway to do something on the savings side, so that's good. But the further increase in potential hedging costs and the lack of prepayment penalties, or not lack, decrease of prepayment penalties versus what we've seen this year, and will definitely have an impact on the NII.
And I don't know if you disclosed the amount of prepayment penalties for 2018. I don't know if that's somewhere in the release.
I don't think we have the prepayment penalty something, but it is relatively stable, the amount of prepayments or at least redemptions that we've seen in the book. And from an interest rate perspective, if you look at the renewals, which we've obviously seen quite a lot, the early renewal rate and the interest averaging rates, they used to be fairly high in 2016 and 17, but they've come down a lot. And then really the early redemption rate, that has been more or less stable since 2016. So it's really the early renewals and interest averaging that has come down since 16 and 17.
Yep. Okay. That's very helpful.
Marcel Houben, Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three, if I may. So the first on the mortgage market in Holland. Some of your peers are saying that, especially at the end of 2018, they saw stabilization on the margin side in 2018. Do you see similar trends in the market? And what is your expectation for 2019 regarding the competition on mortgages? Secondly, on the consumer lending, which is, volumes has come down quite a bit. Is there a particular reason for that, and how do you expect this trend to continue into 2019? And the third question is on the NII, to come back on that. The drop on the NII year on year, how much of that drop is explained by the replicating portfolio yields? And how do you expect that? Do you still expect a drag into 2019 from this book, please? Thank you.
Your question on mortgages. Towards the end of 2018, we indeed saw some relief of the margin pressure there. We didn't disclose our commercial margins, but if you would kind of look end 2018 versus end 2017, and you would just compare a 10-year NHG mortgage versus a 10-year swap, We've seen a spread, a bit of a spread widening there. I think year end last year it would be around 80 bips, and I think we're currently at around 115 bips, i.e. Mortgage rate on a 10 years NHG versus a 10 year swap. So we do see some relief on that side. In terms of the NII drop, we don't disclose the replicating portfolio and yields there. If I would look at it from a more interest expense level, it is clear that given the fact that we are approaching the 0% in terms of sight deposit rates, and most of the banks, including us, are really weary to go below that, that there is some margin pressure on the savings side. Consumer lending there has not been a specific goal to reduce that. Having said it, it's not a actively offered product, and we do not actively entice our clients to go into consumer lending, especially that given the fact that on the arrears side we see that most of the problems actually occur due to consumer lending, which then spread to the mortgages. And so we don't entice people to actually actively go into consumer lending.
Thank you. Can I just follow up on the mortgage side? Is that so? What drives this market stabilization? Is it competition, or is it just a business mix? As in, perhaps people are clients are buying more into 5 to 10 year fixed rather than the long end, where Volksbank might have a stronger position there.
No, I think towards the end of the year, we still see a lot of competition from insurance companies and from pension funds. Towards the year end, we did see it level off a little bit, maybe because their balance sheets or their Solvency II capacity was reaching the end for that year. And in terms of client demand, we still see a lot of demand in the longer dated periods.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, for any additional questions or remarks, please press star 1. Star 1 for questions or remarks.
All right, thanks a lot for your participation and calls, and for taking the effort to dial in. Thank you. I think we can close the call now.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.